provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about private equity in CW 2829. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Hey, everyone. Today, we're going to cut through the noise and really focus on the vital insights coming out of private equity. We're taking a deep dive into the top trends shaping conversations on LinkedIn over calendar weeks 28 and 29.
Yeah, our mission here is to distill those core shifts, the critical takeaways, especially for professionals like you in M&A, PE, VC, and consulting.
Exactly. We want to explore how the industry is adapting, how it's innovating, and, you know, what it all really means for value creation in the future of investing.
Okay, let's unpack this. What we've seen emerge, I think, over the past couple of weeks on LinkedIn is this pretty definitive return to fundamentals in the PE conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It really seems to be all about sharpening leadership, building what they're calling operational alpha, and refining those really crucial liquidity pathways.
Absolutely. The focus has sharpened, you know, considerably. Digital tools, very specific sector theses. They're clearly reshaping not just where capital goes, but how it's being deployed.
Right.
And even though fundraising is still, let's say, highly selective, the emphasis is just firmly on the fundamental strength of the business. And that starts right at the top.
Which brings us, yeah, directly to our first key theme, leadership and talent. It's pretty clear firms are really clarifying their leadership architecture.
Definitely.
We're seeing a big push towards using like fractional chief revenue officers, CROs, and interim managers, plus, you know, a much sharper definition of those key C-suite roles to keep portfolio companies on track for growth and exit.
Indeed. Someone like Yuri Larichev recently highlighted how these fractional CROs are acting a bit like revenue special ops.
Ah, okay. Special ops.
Yeah, they kind of parachute in for these specific high impact needs. Could be due diligence, turnarounds, maybe pre-exit prep. The appeal is clear. They deliver significant ROI, he says, often 2-3x, plus maybe 20-35% revenue growth, and all without that long onboarding you get with a full-time hire.
So it's about getting that high impact leadership, but on demand.
Yeah.
Exactly when you need it.
Precisely. And Bjorn Henriksen added that executive interim managers bring this really critical objective outside in view. They're not burdened by, you know, legacy stuff. They focus purely on results. And that's invaluable for leadership continuity during transitions, especially if you need time to fill a permanent role properly.
That makes a lot of sense, particularly when you think about the specific challenges of hiring for the C-suite.
Yeah.
What are the nuances there? It's not just filling a seat, right?
Well, Georgia Morgan Wren pointed out a common pitfall. Mm-hmm. Lots of businesses think they need a general counsel, but maybe the actual job, the leadership level needed, or even the budget doesn't quite fit that grand title.
Right.
She really emphasizes defining the actual impact needed from the role, differentiating clearly between, say, a head of legal, a GC, or a chief legal officer. Getting that wrong. Very costly hiring mistake for a PE-backed company.
That's a critical distinction then, tailoring the role. And it seems like beyond those specific roles, there are maybe broader strategic leadership gaps firms are looking at. Alan Gonsenhauser, for instance, observed that boards often overlook marketing as a strategic lever.
Yeah, that's right.
Treating it like an afterthought instead of a core growth driver, which seems, well, problematic for growth-hungry PE firms.
Exactly. And this ties right into what Jason Wachtel was underscoring. The evolving executive profile PE firms are actively seeking now. It's not just financial smarts anymore.
Right.
They're prioritizing operational depth, digital fluency, cultural agility. These traits seem to define success in today's PE world, and getting that kind of transformational talent, it's becoming central to long-term value.
It really sounds like the people side is moving from, you know, support function to being absolutely core to the investment thesis itself.
Mm.
Scott Engler summed it up perfectly, I thought. He said, people risk is now investment risk.
Wow. Yeah.
He detailed trends like faster CEO turnover, talent assessment moving right into due diligence, and even DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, being tied explicitly to performance, not just, you know, pledges.
Right. Actual outcomes.
Yeah. His point was, if there's misalignment before the deal closes, you can't just fix it later. It genuinely derails value creation.
Absolutely. And Sarah Erasmus reinforced this, focusing on the HR metrics that really matter in PE. She argued, you know, traditional HR dashboards, they track activity, not impact.
Mm-hmm.
The shift is towards linking people data directly to the investment thesis, focusing on metrics that flag risk early and actually support commercial decisions for the board.
And we're even seeing this talent focus spill across borders now.
Mm-hmm.
James O'Dowd reported U.S. PE-backed professional services firms are aggressively entering Europe. Yeah, attracting top senior talent with better infrastructure, faster execution, and really compelling comp packages tied to equity earnouts. It signals Europe seen as talent-rich, maybe undervalued.
Right, the M&A cycle shifting.
Exactly. And despite all the tech talk, Andreas Klab also highlighted from a Rivian Capital event that, you know, personal networks, still incredibly important for value creation.
It always comes back to people, doesn't it? These shifts underline a larger point Joe Hetherington made.
Yeah.
Experienced PE execs are navigating longer hold times and less deal flow with what he called strategic patience. The industry's clearly rewiring itself, and leadership is key.
Okay, so leadership is huge. What's next?
Well, that brings us neatly to our second major theme, operational excellence and AI, the value creation playbook in PE. It's decisively pivoted away from relying mainly on financial leverage towards building operational alpha.
Right, that phrase again.
Yeah. Stefan Pauls and Scott Kosh both stress this. Value creation now hinges more on deep operational improvements, managerial skill, less on just financial engineering. That's where the real alpha is coming from.
Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. AI. It's not just a concept anymore, is it? It's rapidly moving into being a real capability for value creation.
No question.
Mark Rogerson and Gary Pearson even have a new book, The AI Fix for Private Equity, aiming to guide leaders on using AI effectively, you know, pre-deal right through to exit.
And firms are definitely seeing real applications. Mohammed Shaheen outlined his safe 7 AI value creation levers. Things like AI-driven demand forecasting, predictive maintenance,
okay,
Gen AI for customer support. But crucially, he points out most portfolio companies can realistically only activate maybe 2 or 3 of these at once.
Ah, so focus is key.
Exactly. And this links directly to Nitya Srivastava's caution. A staggering 70% of AI initiatives fail to deliver ROI if you don't have the right data foundations and like true AI readiness. It's less about the tech itself.
And more about the prep and strategy.
Got it. So it's about targeted implementation, not just, you know, throwing AI everywhere. Do we have a concrete example of this working?
Absolutely. Yannick Hunecke at Deutsche Beteiligungs AG shared how they're using their own AI tool, Nexus.
Nexus.
Yeah. To basically revolutionize deal sourcing. It combines huge data sources with their network, turning big data into, well, better data, makes their investment process smarter, much more efficient.
That's a powerful edge for deal flow. And it's not just sourcing, right? Alan Arsenault highlighted how the Carlyle Group has integrated AI across their entire operation. Culture, decision making.
The whole thing.
Yeah. From training new hires on ChatGPT day one, to automating legal invoice audits, streamlining investment reports, Carlyle sounds like a blueprint for embedding AI.
That holistic integration, that's really key. David Judah emphasized AI is becoming crucial for PE firms to actually win mandates now.
Win mandates? How so?
Well, Gartner projects that by 2027, PE firms embedding AI across the investment lifecycle will outperform peers by 30%, both in IRR and MOIC. 30%? Wow.
Yeah, it's becoming the new language of value creation. Wolf Tone reinforced this leadership alignment, talent, data discipline are key drivers. And Nico Kramp added that AI's impact is more about a mindset, not just the tech.
Okay, so AI is transforming external value creation,
mm-hmm.
but are firms also looking inward at their own efficiency? I saw this piece by Lee McCabe. Quite provocative.
Ah, yes. Kill the Monday partner meeting.
Exactly. He sees it as a relic. Almost like expensive group therapy disguised as work.
He definitely didn't mince words. And he offered alternatives, too, not just cutting it.
Right. What did he suggest?
Things like asynchronous, written-first communication, real-time data visibility with live dashboards for KPIs, cross-functional task forces. The goal is clearly more doing, less talking, giving partners back time for actual strategy, building founder relationships.
That internal streamlining makes perfect sense, especially when you hear Jordan Pinnett calling 2025 a transition year for PE. Subdued deal volumes mean there's a higher premium on disciplined execution and, critically, organic growth.
That's exactly where Brian Gustafson's sales velocity formula fits in. He argues, look, traditional leverage, multiple expansion, less reliable now, organic growth is the most controllable driver of valuation.
So what's the formula?
It's basically sales velocity equals qualified opportunities times win rate times average deal size, all divided by sales cycle length.
Okay.
And he shows how even small tweaks, like a 25% boost in qualified ops or a 10% lift in win rate, can significantly increase sales velocity without needing more people. It's data-driven growth.
That's a really tangible way to drive value. Mm-hmm. And on the tech side, David Mackey noted smart PE firms are consolidating tech stacks across their portfolio.
Yeah, building shared platforms.
Exactly. Powering cloud services, standardizing tools, raising security, unlocking portfolio-wide data and AI. It gives individual companies enterprise-grade capabilities they couldn't afford alone.
And Jennifer Forges observed PE is moving beyond just cost-cutting now. It's real business transformation talent, pricing, Gen AI integration. Paul Press echoed that the value creation playbook is changing fast. Operational alpha, modern teams. Financial engineering alone isn't enough anymore.
For a concrete example of this operational focus paying off, Lucas Bettel shared a case study, placing a group COO in a PE-owned IT services group.
What were the results?
Within 12 months, $3 million in annual cost savings, a 4-point EBITDA margin lift, 40% faster incident response through automation. Just shows how vital operational leadership is for scaling and exit readiness.
Wow, clear impact. And Etienne Imperatore wrapped up this theme nicely, just highlighting how Gen AI is enhancing everything from deal making to fund management for PE firms, making things more precise, more efficient.
Okay, let's move on. Our third critical theme, fundraising and returns. This feels like an area where PE firms are maybe still facing some serious headwinds, and the returns landscape is definitely changing.
Yeah, it is. We're seeing more traction for secondaries and co-investments as tactical ways to get liquidity. Samer Hokora mentioned how these can speed up returns and help mitigate that J-curve effect.
Well, the initial dip.
Exactly. That initial period where returns look negative because of fees and costs before assets mature. And Casper Wichman added, when you invest in PE, it's not just picking the fund, but also the right level of access fund to funds, direct co-investments, etc.
And it seems LPs, the limited partners, are really pushing for more fee transparency. What's driving that?
Kamar Jaffer's insights here are fascinating. The old 2-in-20 model, it's definitely giving way to more flexible, investor-focused setups.
Like what?
Fee step-downs, bespoke terms for big investors. It's particularly the Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds, with their scale and sophistication, who are really driving this change, demanding much more transparency on all fees and expenses.
This push for transparency comes just as there's a big focus on aging funds. Hugh MacArthur, in his Private Thoughts, called for LPs to clean out the PE attic. He noted that by year 12, fund value universally declines. What's the takeaway there?
His message is pretty blunt. LPs and GPs need to be proactive about exits for companies held over 7 years, clinging to them out of inertia. That's expensive optimism, especially when distributions are low. Mm-hmm. The secondary market is maturing, offering tools like LP portfolio sales, GP-led restructurings. There's no excuse for being passive anymore. As he put it, dead money is worse than dry powder.
Oof. Stark warning. This also brings up that ongoing debate. PE performance versus public equities. Risk adjusted. Courtney Ranstrom voiced skepticism about PE's value for most investors, citing liquidity and transparency issues. Is that skepticism justified?
Well, Harold Berlinick shared a study showing publicly traded PE funds have higher volatility than the S&P 500, about 1.5 times higher, median volatility of 24%. That gives a more realistic view when PE is publicly exposed. But Palomaro found PE returns in emerging markets have matched or even beaten the S&P 500 recently. Still, Cyril Bosch projected continued PE underperformance in the coming years due to current conditions, higher rates, less leverage. So it's a mixed picture.
So what does this all mean for the overall outlook? Sounds like a complex mix of challenges and maybe some emerging opportunities.
Vincent Zerner thinks private markets might be at a tipping point. He cited McKinsey's report showing a 14% rebound in deal value this year. And crucially, distributions exceeded capital calls for the first time since 2015.
Oh, that's significant. Improved liquidity.
Yeah. And 84% of LPs expect to maintain or increase allocations. Eddie Hemsley also gave three reasons for optimism: sustained LP commitment, steady deal flow in key sectors, and firms strategically resetting internally.
Yet, we also heard warnings, right? Jonathan Maraj mentioned funding challenges for entrepreneurs, debt covenants, down round risks, especially for some of those, you know, unicorn valuations from a few years back.
Right. His advice was basically choose capital that truly powers your mission. Don't just take any money.
Yeah.
And Charlotte Ashton just summed up PE's core focus succinctly. They're obsessed with EBITDA and cash, because that's what drives returns for their investors in this climate.
Okay, let's shift gears one last time. Our fourth theme, the deal landscape and sector moves. What are we seeing in specific sectors and the broader M&A environment?
Okay, starting with a high growth spot, John Fox highlighted accelerated growth in the MSP segment managed services providers.
IT services.
Exactly. Rising IT complexity, talent shortages, cybersecurity demands. MSPs are mission critical now, attracting huge interest from strategic buyers and PE firms looking for those stable recurring revenues.
Makes sense. And what about software that's been so hot for so long? Jill Stelfox's H1 2025 review noted, well, decreased deal flow, lower valuations.
Yeah, a cool down.
A definite shift from growth at all costs to a laser focus on profitability, operational improvement. The new playbook, she said, is operate, optimize, deliver profit, and love your customers. That's a clear change. And Lamia Rezik found something similar, maybe more discerning, in medtech. Capital hasn't fled, but it's highly selective now. Focused, conviction-driven. PE is still active, but demands much more regulatory readiness, clear paths to commercialization.
Okay, here's an unexpected one that Rodrigo Cobos pointed out. PE moving into fossil fuels. What's driving that?
It is an interesting pivot, isn't it? Cobos points directly to the massive energy demand linked to AI workloads.
Ah, the power needed for AI.
Exactly. As AI scales, it needs immense power. So traditional energy sources become, maybe surprisingly, attractive investments for some key players. On a more perhaps traditional European note, Jacqueline Kaplan observed renewed confidence in Europe's innovation engine.
Yes.
European PE is focusing on resilient, scalable tech platforms where tech is a real growth driver, which means tech due diligence is becoming absolutely critical in these deals.
Yannick Hellhag saw strong mid-cap momentum in the DACH region, Germany, Austria, Switzerland. Platform deals, strategic add-ons, so regional activity is still robust.
And Nick Alvarez noted carve-outs are increasingly attractive for corporations wanting to divest non-core units. That creates opportunities for PE to unlock value in those spinoffs.
Beyond those sectors, we saw other interesting bits. Moritz Lenders launched a blog on PE's impact on European football. That's a fascinating niche.
Definitely different.
Simon Taylor updated on EMEA, private capital markets, liquidity challenges, but also opportunities emerging. And just the sheer dynamism of the market was clear from mentions of key industry events by people like Alex Rodriguez, Christoph Jost, Claudia Zeisberger, Andreas Klab, Ingo Kroc, and Dr. Mark P. Bielitsa. Lots going on.
Always busy.
So, wrapping this all up, what does this mean for you, our listener? Considering how rapidly private equity firms are embedding AI and operational excellence across their entire investment life cycle, what does this fundamental transformation mean for every professional interacting with the PE ecosystem? Whether you're a founder seeking capital or a consultant advising on strategy.
Yeah, the question really becomes, how AI-ready and operationally robust is your business when viewed through a private equity lens?
Right. And where are the opportunities for you to integrate these new playbooks that PE is clearly adopting? Something to think about. If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on venture capital, M&A, and strategy and consulting. Thank you for joining us, and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next exploration into the forces shaping the market.